and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Edward Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we're talking about how to be successful as a buyer within each of the four sales processes. Now, remember, this comes from a listener of the show, Jason, who's been asking about, well, how do I be successful within each of the four different sales processes, which we talked about yesterday. Now, in today's show, there's a lot to cover, so we're only going to talk about price by negotiation and deadline sales, and then in tomorrow's episode, we're going to talk about auctions and tenders. Now, Andrew, kick us off. We're going to start again like we did yesterday with price by negotiation. So how do you be successful as a buyer?
Okay, so negotiation, as we spoke about yesterday, is just where you, it's your most common form of completing a sale and purchase. So what you're going to have is a situation where someone's got a property advertised and either there's a price attached to it or buyer's inquiry over, for example. And so what you want to do to be successful at these is put a good offer forward, but they're kind of easiest to negotiate in, because generally speaking, you probably don't have a lot of competition because, you know, it's a specific property type or it's in a region that's a bit slower in terms of the market at the moment. Or often with the lower cost, agents will use these because there's lower cost for advertising for them, or private sellers as well tend to use negotiation. So the way I've been successful at negotiations is to use some of the old hat tricks. So one particular agent that we were just talking to yesterday, we were talking about one of these methods that is the cross out method. So you put in your price and you say, you know, $476,000, and then you cross it out and you put $484,000, and then you might cross it out and just put $497,000. And then it looks like the agent's kind of absolutely trying to work you to the last dollar. And the other thing you often do is say, in $250. And then the agent can go back and say, look, I absolutely worked them. We've gone as high as we possibly can. That's the only amount of money that they can get from the bank. Everyone does that nowadays. So it might work, but it's probably not as useful as it previously was. The other thing was to actually attach a check of your deposit, $50,000, and have that payable straight away. Now, obviously, if your contract isn't unconditional, that would be a refundable deposit, unless the contract states otherwise, because you can have all your standard conditions in there. But the thing I think with negotiating is you can kind of do whatever you like, because there's not the same level of competition as with some of these other methods that we're about to talk about.
And why is it that that cross out method of writing down a price, crossing it out, going a bit higher, why doesn't that work anymore?
Just because it's kind of so commonly known. And also probably the legislation's changed now. Agents have to focus on the person that's paying them, which is the vendor. And so their job is to get the top dollar. 15 years ago, you could probably work, you know, with the agent a little bit easier than you can today. If an agent thinks they can get more money out of you, they should be doing that. They've got a fiduciary obligation to do so.
And obviously, over the break, you know, Andrew, I've been reading Chris Voss's book, Never Split the Difference. And one of the tactics he talks about in there, and I know you've read this book as well, and great book for anybody if you haven't read that before. One of the things he talks about is, if you're going to make an offer, use an odd number, like $476,250, yes, rather than $475,000, because you take more notice of it, or something along these lines.
And actually, just one other thing that's jumped into my mind as we're talking about this. One of my good friends was trying to buy a commercial building over the break, and he was in a negotiation situation. The commercial market in Canterbury, where he was looking at buying, was, you know, maybe a bit softer than it had been pre-COVID. And so he was trying to get this property under contract for, I think he was wanting to pay $640,000. Now, at the time that he started the negotiation, there was no one else interested in the property, and it hadn't been since pre-COVID. And during the two-week negotiation, someone else came in and offered more money. Now, they offered, I think it was $690,000. And so then you've got a new price anchored in the vendor's mind. So they're probably unlikely to accept anything less than that after that period of time. So now what Nath actually managed to do is get a backup offer put in. So what I recommended is we have a backup offer and get that accepted with a clause that doesn't allow an extension on the original contract. So if the person who has the initial offer in, the live offer, gets to Friday at 4 p.m. and they haven't confirmed their condition or they ask for any kind of variance, then potentially that contract gets cancelled straight away and Nath's offer kicks in. The other thing that we did was we offered the money that he was prepared to pay, the $690,000, which he wasn't unhappy with, but he wasn't happy with either. That was kind of his top dollar. But because his contract was going to be conditional, we were going to negotiate afterwards. Now, he didn't realise, because it was a conditional offer, you could still negotiate after. because the ball's in your court. So the recommendation I gave was get this property under offer, put the ball in your court, and then when we get to the 11th hour, maybe not quite the 11th hour in case there was another backup offer, what we do is we say, hey, look, we're happy to confirm, but based on a variance of the contract. We're happy to confirm at, say, 670 because we've found XYZ.
And this is the classic Andrew Nicol tactic that we talk about frequently on this show. Get the property under contract and then introduce new conditions later, or reduce the price later based on what you've found out in your due diligence. Yes. Now, some people might be listening to the show, Andrew, you know, thinking about buying through a price by negotiation process and think, oh, it feels a bit slimy. What do you say to that?
Look, at the end of the day, you can offer a lower amount straight off the bat, but if you know that there's a bit of competition, you have to have the best foot forward. And I think that it's really important to only put a dollar figure that you're happy to pay there. And then if you can get a better deal, I mean, it's a free market. The other person's got every right to say no.
And what do you think about things like exploding offers? Because one of the things, and we'll explain what this is in just one moment, but obviously one of the unique things about price by negotiation is you don't have a set deadline. All of the other processes, auctions, tenders, and deadline sales, they've all got specific time periods you're working to where you'd expect there to be more competition. Don't necessarily have that with a price by negotiation. So you want to make sure that if you're making an offer, ideally that you're going to have that accepted before any other offers come in. So would you ever do an exploding offer and say, yeah, look, I'm going to offer you this, I expect to hear back within 24 hours?
Yeah, so in the instance with Nath, obviously he was the backup offer because someone else had come in and pipped him at the post. Now, from what I understand, it was about a two-week negotiation in the first stages, and maybe it just kind of wasn't as much of a priority at that stage because there wasn't that competition. I always recommend, you know, if it is kind of getting to the point where it's your top dollar, or if you're about to enter a weekend or something like that, because if there's open homes being shown over the weekend, you want to say something to the agent along the lines of, hey, look, there's another property we're wanting to put an offer in on, so we need to hear back on 24 hours and make your offer conditional of that. And that way they can't drag it out over the weekend.
And would you agree as well that in that instance, it's probably best to make that offer no later than a Thursday? Because if you make that on a Friday, you're probably not going to hear back before the open homes because the agents want to allow them to run, and most agents will take Saturday off.
Correct.
Fantastic. Let's move on to the deadline sales. And we may actually have to split this into two episodes because there's so much going on. And I know we could talk about tenders and auctions for a long time as well. Let's talk about deadline sales. Now, the important thing to remember in terms of the difference between an auction and a deadline sale when you're the purchaser is that in auctions, it's all about price because all of those bids are unconditional. But in other sales processes, like a deadline sale, there is always more room for negotiation because you can offer on other clauses. You don't have to do an unconditional bid or an unconditional offer. So step number one, and this is common for generally all of the sales processes, but particularly with a deadline sale where you may be negotiating on other clauses, is to figure out what's the reason that the other side is selling and what are the things that they care about other than price. So everybody cares about price. We can all acknowledge that. But what are some of the unique things that perhaps they need a quick sale? Perhaps they've already had an offer accepted on another house and they are now unconditional on another property. Now, that means that they are going to want to settle their current property. They need to get rid of that as soon as possible so that they're able to settle on this other property and don't have extended bridging finance where they're having to pay two mortgages at once. Or perhaps one of the partners or the person who owns this property is moving city and they are going to go and start a new job. They need to look for properties and they want to go bid on places. And so therefore they want to be unconditional. They want to be cash buyers in that new market. So is there some sort of time constraint that these people are worried about that they want to work to? And in that case, you might be able to introduce clauses. So you might then offer to have an early settlement date or to forego some sort of conditions around alterations to the house that you would otherwise be asking for to make it easy for these people to move on. And in that case, they may be more willing to give on price, to come down in price, if you're able to give some of those other things that they really need in order to be able to keep going.
You kind of want to make price your last point of negotiation. So when you make your offer, you think about things like, well, you know, it doesn't really matter to us about the, you know, the fact that they're going to take the curtains out or something like that, which I saw in a recent purchase. They're not going to care about the fact that they want to settle on the 23rd of December and it's a pain in the butt time of year. Be flexible on all those things. Make price the last thing you're flexible on if you want to get a good deal.
And then something else you might want to do is when an agent wants to start talking about price, you might pivot to some of these other conditions. So Andrew might be the real estate agent now. He says, right, so let's put in an offer. We're really looking for 620. And I might come back and say, yes, definitely want to talk about this. Now, let's just talk about when you want to settle by or when you need the money by. So he might make an offer to me in terms of price. I pivot towards conditions so that if I give on these, then if he wants to push me on price, I can say, well, I'm happy to go up on that price, but I need to take out some of these conditions.
And sometimes you do have to kind of get a good read of why the person is selling, what the vendor's motivation is. And sometimes you might think there is more urgency than there actually is. So just thinking about our GM, Ollie McKenna, so he's been trying to negotiate a property purchase over the break. And the situation is this: the property owner that he's buying from is getting separated. Now, normally speaking, in my experience, separation's a great way to kind of get a good deal and quickly. In this instance, the guy that owns it is a builder and he's living there and the wife isn't. So he's less inclined to be in a bit more of a hurry. And so the person that was also negotiating to buy this property was prepared to pay a higher price, but with some works done. Now this guy thought, well, I can live in the property longer by doing that. I can then do the construction work that they want done and I can get a higher price. So that was a more appealing offer than Ollie's offer, which was, you know, less money, but money now. So sometimes you do have to have a good understanding of what it is that this person's looking for.
And some of the questions you can ask in order to get this information, because of course you can't improve your offer if you don't know what the other side is looking for, is to ask the real estate agent, you know, how quickly does this need to be sold? What are some of the deadlines the vendor has given you? What's going to make this offer stand out from any other offer if we offer the same price? So if you're asking some open-ended exploratory questions, this is where you're going to be able to get that intel in order to be able to improve that offer. And what I do need to say as well, while you're out purchasing properties, is that the only way to win every single time in an offer is to go really high on price, aggressive on price, and light on conditions. So my point there is that you've got to be willing to lose. You're not going to win every single one if you're trying to get the best deal possible.
Yes, that's right. And it's really important if you're buying for investment that you know where that limit is and you don't go a dollar above it, because otherwise, you know, you get into some of these situations and you think, oh, I'll just go a little bit higher, and then you end up buying something that's no longer a good investment. And every property can be a rental property. Not every property can be a good investment at that particular price.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you'd like to listen to part three of this, which is happening tomorrow, where we're going to talk about how to be successful in auctions and in the tender process, then make sure you come back, because we'll be releasing part three of this series tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.